Amendment that was enacted back in, I think, 1999. And that amendment and the rules that were promulgated by the Office of Management and Budget to govern federal research grants basically says that that the data that has to be publicly available under the federal FOIA, even if it's at a private research institution conducting research with federal funds, does not include things like the notes of the faculty member, their correspondence with one another, and those types of documents. So I think that it's important to recognize that the protections under the federal FOIA for federally funded research at private institutions are actually broader than protections under many state FOIA laws for that same information. And therein lies one of the conundrums that are presented by a broad application of these state FOIA laws to faculty correspondence at public institutions, because you have essentially differential treatment between private institutions, which are not subject to FOIA, and even if they are by virtue of federally funded research, enjoy wide protection of faculty correspondence under the OMB's Shelby Amendment rule. Public institutions are not so protected. And so you essentially have differential treatment, and you have over a period of time the great risk that public institutions will be disadvantaged and compromised by the fact that they have to deal with these state FOIA laws. They're going to lose faculty over time, because who wants to be subject to a harassment campaign that can make your life miserable? And they are going to eventually, I believe, compromise the ability of their faculty members to collaborate with other researchers at private institutions. Because let's not forget that the correspondence of those other researchers at private institutions can also be subject to disclosure if they are held by a university server at a public institution. And so you really have a very corrosive effect that's created by this.
Thank you. Our next question is, does FOIA apply equally to researchers working at a non-governmental 501c3 public charity research institute?
It does not. Because 501c3s are not government agencies. And so they are not subject to FOIA typically. Now, if they are conducting federally funded research, then their data is subject to FOIA, but the broad application of the statute to those 501c3s does not apply.
Great, thank you. So our next question is, you distinguished FOIA when applied to Government and Sunshine, with which you agreed with faculty correspondence. However, what is your position when a scientist at a public university is a participant in a government or intergovernmental committee? What is the basis of exempting participation in governmental committees from FOIA?
You know, I'm going to pass on that question.
Okay. At this point, if anyone else has other questions, please go ahead and type them into the box for chat. I have one question that I would like to ask,
sure,
which is in regards to how widely state FOIA laws range. Are a lot of them based on the exact same thing, or are there wide discrepancies between them? And are there any particular states about which you are really concerned for any members who may be working in the institution in those states?
You know, that's a good question, Liz, and it cries out for someone to do some 50-state research on this. There clearly are differences between the states as to what protections apply. Some legislatures have been more visionary in identifying exemptions and carving out exemptions for public institutions, university institutions. Others just haven't thought about the issue. And so it's really a state-by-state analysis. I can tell you that Virginia, in my view, is one of the more progressive states because they have, created this exemption that's been on the books for many years. But certainly there are other states that don't have that kind of protection. So that's, I think that's one of the projects that the Climate Science Defense Fund will undertake in order to try to provide more of a resource for faculty that are confronting these issues.
Sounds like it's a resource we need. I saw a couple other people were typing in some questions, so we'll see if any of those come up. At this point, I would also like to ask if there's anyone who has dialed in on the phone line who would like to ask a question over the phone. Sounds like a no. Well, if we have no further questions, I would like to thank Peter very much for this enlightening presentation. I think this was really helpful. And if you have, we have one last question. The question is, FOIA was used by Baggerly and Coombs to identify a fraud by Duke University cancer researcher Anil Patti. Do you disagree with their use of FOIA?
I'm not familiar with that case, so I really can't comment on it.
Okay. Thank you. And we have a couple more questions.
Sure.
Please, go ahead.
Now, there's one. I see that there's one other person typing here.
We'll wait for those questions to come in. Okay. Coming from industry, what is the relationship between tech transfer agreements pertaining to disclosure under FOIA?
Yeah, that's a good question, and also one that presents additional tension. To me, that gets into the proprietary interest of the university, and for those jurisdictions that have that kind of protection, I would say that tech transfer agreements and information exchange would be subject to protection under FOIA. I think that most tech transfer agreements do have confidentiality requirements in the contracts. And so part of the issue there would be the extent to which that kind of confidentiality protection in the contract itself and the agreement would govern the analysis of, as to whether or not information would have to be disclosed. And I don't know if that's been resolved yet, but I would imagine that that there are certainly universities that are confronting that issue as we speak.
Great, thank you. I think we have a couple other questions that people are typing in. Here we go. I am from a federal agency, and we can withhold many documents requested under FOIA as deliberative in preparing perhaps a decision. Is this generally acceptable for universities to apply as well?
Well, it's going to, again, depend on whether or not this particular state FOIA law has an exemption for deliberative process documents. Virginia, for example, has a working papers exemption for certain members of the university, such as those that are actually conducting the public business of the university, the president and vice presidents, provosts, and things like that. Their working papers, which is analogous to the deliberative process privilege under FOIA, are generally exempted. That's a different analysis, I think, than the proprietary information exemption that was at issue in the Mann litigation. But again, this highlights the fact that the federal FOIA laws are very different. And when you're talking about state public institutions of higher education, you're dealing with a state analysis, which is going to be different from the federal FOIA.
Thank you. Another question we have is, can you review again the exemption you mentioned at UVA?
Yes. Yeah, there's an exemption under the Virginia FOIA Act that basically protects and gives the university the discretion to withhold information of a proprietary nature that's prepared or received by a faculty member in furtherance of their research on scientific or scholarly issues. And that's the exemption that was directly at issue in the case.
Excellent. And another question we have, is the Climate Science Defense Fund available to help others who will be attacked in the future?
Yes, absolutely. The fund is available for scientists that not obviously just the scientists at issue here, but any scientist that is in the climate change field that is being attacked. There's a webpage that you can go to contact the fund to request assistance. And Liz, do you have that webpage available?
We will send that out in the follow-up email to everyone so that everyone gets that information.
Great.
And does anyone have any additional questions at this point? Well, I'd like to thank Peter again. This presentation has been excellent, and I hope that all of our participants will join us for some of our upcoming events, all of which you can read about on the AGU website under Science Policy and Events. Thank you again, Peter. Thank you, everyone, for joining us.
Hey, Liz, just one clarification. I do have the Climate Science Defense Fund webpage. It's climatesciencedefensefund.org.
Wonderful. ClimateScienceDefenseFund.org. Thank you all for joining us today. Thank you, Peter.
Thank you, everybody.